Welcome to www.meeknessandtruth.org, a teaching and ministry website of Dr. David Geisler. Now join him for Conversational Pre-Evangelism, Part 3.
I will awake in the dawn.
Good morning. I want to, first of all, thank you for those of you who are sending me in your divine appointments. It's very, very encouraging. Now, let me do a little review about what we talked about last week. I said conversational evangelism involves four types of conversations that we want to have with our non-believing friends: hearing, illuminating, uncovering, and building. And last week, we looked at the first part, hearing conversations. Now, here's the difficult question. Why did I say that sometimes it's not enough just to love people into the kingdom? Why is it that sometimes we need to help our friends to identify the gaps or the sour notes in their beliefs? Why did I say this was important? Let me give you a hint. Why was it important for Jesus and the rich young ruler? Why was it important for Jesus to help this young man see the gaps in his beliefs? What was Jesus trying to get this young man to do? Come to his own conclusion. Now, why is that important? What did I say last time? See, Jesus understands human nature, and he knows that sometimes we are not going to be motivated to what? To change, to repent, unless what? Unless we see the problem. And so that's why Jesus used this approach. And what I suggested to you is that sometimes you will have to do the same with some of your non-believing friends. You will have to help them to see that the foundation upon which they're building their life is not strong enough to hold them. Because if they don't see it's not strong enough to hold them, they may not have the motivation then to take a step away from where they're standing and to hear more about Jesus. Do you remember that? So that's why it's important sometimes to really help people to hear the gaps or sour notes in their beliefs. And now, last week we talked about these four types of sour notes. Do you remember that? Just briefly, belief versus heart longing, belief versus behavior, belief versus belief, and illogical belief. Now today, we want to take the next step and talk about not just hearing conversations, but illuminating conversations. Now, what do I mean by illuminating conversations? Well, when we came into this room, somebody turned the light on and illuminated the room. And that's exactly what you and I want to do. We want to illuminate the truth for our non-believing friends. We want them to see what you and I see and hear. But we want to do it in a way that what? Allows them to surface the truth for themselves. Now, look at this graphic. Notice what the car salesman is saying to this guy. Notice the plush interior. What is the question that we should be asking the car salesman? Yeah, where's the missing engine? How does the car run? When I was talking to my free-thinking friend in Singapore, and I asked her the question, as a free thinker, have you come to any conclusions about Jesus Christ? Do you know what I was doing? I was essentially saying, where is your missing engine? You've got to do something with Jesus. You can't leave him out, you know? He's too big to leave out. He's too important to leave out. He's essential. You can't leave him out. Just like you can't leave the engine out of the car. When I was talking to my former nanny in Singapore, who is a Buddhist, and I asked her this question, as a Buddhist, how do you fit Jesus into your Buddhism? And she said to me, I haven't quite figured that out. What was I doing? I was saying to her, where is your missing engine? When I was talking to my wife's aunt, I said, why would our Creator purposely confuse us? What was I doing? I was saying, where is your missing engine? Where is it? That's what you and I want to do. We want to illuminate the truth to people. We want them to see what it is that you and I see. So as a musician, we want to listen, right? And hear the sour notes that people are singing to us. The second step is the artist. What do we want to do as an artist? What does an artist do? An artist paints, right? Here's what you and I want to do. As an artist, we want to paint a picture to help people see themselves in a more clear light. Now, we want to paint a picture metaphorically for people by asking them questions. When you and I ask questions, what we do, what we are doing for them, is help them to fill in the missing details about themselves that they don't necessarily want to see. For example, look at this graphic. You notice she kind of has an angelic view of herself. Have you ever noticed that people kind of see themselves a little differently than other people? And what we do when we ask questions is we help people to see themselves in a more clear light. In a sense, when you and I ask questions, we are holding up a mirror. Do you realize that? Every time you ask someone a thought-provoking question about their beliefs, you are holding up a mirror and helping them to think through more clearly about what they believe and why, to see what it is that they really believe. Now, how do we do this? How do we paint a picture by asking questions? Well, there are two kinds of questions that we want to talk about this morning. Questions that clarify the meaning of unclear terms. That's the first kind of question. Questions that clarify the meaning of unclear terms. And the second kind of question is questions that surface uncertainty and or expose false belief systems. Now let's look at the first one. Questions that clarify the meaning of unclear terms. See, this is the third most important thing I want to teach you about this model. The first most important thing I taught you about this model is that we learn to listen better. The second most important thing is I said that you and I need to what? Identify the gaps or sour notes in people's beliefs. The third most important thing I want to teach you about this model is that when you get into a conversation with someone and they use religious terminology especially, I want you to learn to ask this question, what do you mean by? I want you to learn to clarify the meaning of unclear terms. And I want you to learn to use this little phrase, what do you mean by? Now, I want you to learn to practice this with your Christian friends first. Do you know why? Because if you don't feel comfortable with your Christian friends, you're not going to feel comfortable to do this with your non-believing friends. And so basically, with your Christian friends, someone says to you something like this. Oh, the Lord was good to me today. What question do you want to ask them? In what way was the Lord good? See, I want you to understand something about this model, this pre-evangelism model. You don't have to be an expert in Christian theology or Christian apologetics. There's only two things you need to do to be effective in this art called pre-evangelism. Do you know what that is? You have to learn to be a better listener, and you have to learn to ask clarifying questions. And I believe that if you can do those two things, you will be surprised at how many doors will open up for you to even share the gospel with your non-believing friends just by listening and asking clarifying questions. So let me encourage you to practice that this week, to listen and ask clarifying questions. What do you mean by? Somebody says to you, I believe all religions are basically the same. What do you mean by they're all the same? Somebody says, you know, I'm a good person. I go to church. I do all these things. I tithe. I do all these things. Maybe you'll want to ask a question about what do you mean by good? I mean, how much good is good enough, right? That's a clarifying question, right? Or how about this? I was talking to this student on Texas Tech University one day, a number of years ago, and he said this to me. I said, "Who is Jesus Christ?" He said, "Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and he died for us." And I thought to myself, wow, this student's probably a Christian, right? But then I said, well, wait a minute. Apply the same standard you're teaching other people. I said, well, what do you mean by Jesus died for us? And you know what this student said to me? He said, "I believe Jesus died as a moral example of how we should live." Is that Christianity? It's not. Why? Because Romans 5:8 says this, "But God demonstrated his own love for us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." And the Greek preposition there is huper. And it means to die in our place. It means he died in our place and for our benefit. See, he was more than a moral example. But had I not asked that clarifying question, I would have missed it. And I wonder how many times do we hear our neighbors, our coworkers use religious language, and we think, oh, they're going to church every Sunday. They must be a believer. But we've never asked clarifying questions. And so we don't really know where they stand exactly. Maybe they believe that Jesus is the Messiah, but do they believe in him? That's the important thing, right? Remember, 10 weeks ago, I was in Italy. I had a conversation with this non-believer on a university campus. He said to me he was agnostic. So my question to him is, well, what do you mean by agnostic? Do you realize there are two kinds of agnosticism? There's the kind that says, I don't know there's a God, or I can't know there's a God. Which kind are you? That's what was my question. Okay? So you see what I'm talking about? When people use religious terms, we want to ask clarifying questions. Or how about this one? I'm an atheist. Now, if somebody says they're an atheist, I don't use this little phrase, what do you mean by atheist? Do you know why? They may think I'm being a smart aleck. So you don't always use that phrase. Here's what I said to this person. I said, is the reason why you're an atheist is because you've been influenced by books like Richard Dawkins, The God Delusion. So I try to find out, you know, who has kind of impacted their thinking that it's a well-known atheist. In a sense, I'm still trying to find out, you know, what is it that they believe about atheism. I'm still trying to clarify the term atheism, but I didn't use that little phrase. So I'm not saying you should always use that little phrase, what do you mean by, but you should look for an opportunity to ask clarifying questions, all right? Or somebody says to you, I believe Jesus is the Son of God. You know, some of my Jehovah's Witness friends believe that Jesus is the Son of God, but I bet you don't believe he's an angel, do you? All right? So it's very important that we clarify the terms with people. So once we ask questions that clarify the meaning of unclear terms, then we can ask questions that surface uncertainty and expose false belief systems or concepts. Now, this kind of question, I'll be honest, involves a little work on your part. But you don't have to do much work because you realize in the book that my father and I wrote, Conversational Evangelism, at the very end, there's a whole list of questions that you can ask atheists, that you could ask Muslims, that you can ask people of other faiths, okay? So you can even start with some of those questions and just try them out. See if they work, all right? But if you want to go further and really better understand the person you're talking to, can I recommend to you a book by Dean Halverson, D-E-A-N Halverson, H-A-L-V-E-R-S-O-N. He is the apologetic specialist for International Students Incorporated. And he wrote a book, and he has all these different religions, and then he talks about some bridges to the gospel with some of these different people. It's called A Compact Guide to World Religions. A Compact Guide to World Religions. Start there. It's just a simple little book. And each chapter talks about different religions. And names a number of different religions and talks about bridges. even talks about Shintoism and Taoism and all the isms, you know. And it's very, very good. Because you and I need to learn how to ask questions that surface uncertainty and expose false belief systems. Now, how do we do this? How do we surface uncertainty and expose false belief systems? Well, we need to do this, first of all, by beginning to ask probing questions that surface uncertainty in their belief. That's what you first need to do. Surface uncertainty. You see, you're not going to change someone's views overnight. But what you can do is help put a crack in their foundation by you asking a question. Now think about this. A crack in a foundation of a building won't have any serious damage today. But what happens if you allow the crack to grow? Eventually the foundation will come down and the building will come down. Let me illustrate this. Do you know a philosopher named Anthony Flew? Do you know Anthony Flew was one of the most famous atheistic philosophers of our day? He died a year ago. But before he died, do you know that he gave up his atheism? In fact, you can see a video interview, Lee Strobel with Anthony Flew on YouTube, where he talks about this. And he talks about the fact that the evidence for intelligent design is so overwhelming that now he believes there must be a creator. Now, he didn't change his view overnight. And there isn't really any evidence he became a Christian before he died, but he changed his atheism. He was the most famous atheist of our time, and he has given up his atheism. Now, here's why I shared that example with you. You are not going to change your friend's views overnight by asking them these thought-provoking questions. But maybe over a period of time, your thought-provoking questions to your friend can have an impact. You know, when I was talking to my wife's aunt 4 weeks ago, and I asked her, why would our Creator purposely confuse us? I believe that was the first time someone had asked her that kind of thought-provoking question. It may take her a while for her to realize the implication and for her to take those steps to Christ. I'm really praying that God would use that to help her to make that decision. And I'm saying the same thing, that when you ask a thought-provoking question to your non-believing friend and surface doubt in their belief system, the Spirit of God may be able to use that to get into the crack and begin to penetrate their heart. Amen? Begin by asking probing questions that surface uncertainty. So here's some examples of introductory questions that I've used. I'm just going to name a few with college students that have been thought-provoking questions. Questions like, do you really think it matters what we believe? I remember talking to a student after 9/11 who said to me one day, you know, I'm not a Christian, and I used to think it doesn't matter what I believe, but now after 9/11, I know it does matter what I believe. That's a thought-provoking question, isn't it? Does it matter what you believe? Secondly, do you think that all religious beliefs basically teach the same thing? This is a very common belief in our culture today, both in the East and the West, that all religions are basically the same. Remember when we were talking about pluralism, helping people to see the sour note in the pluralistic perspective? These are thought-provoking questions that you can ask your neighbors, your coworkers, the people you go to school with. Third, do you think it's possible that you and I were put here on this earth for some kind of purpose? And if so, what do you think that was? What do you think that was? You know, I find questions about purpose and meaning very significant with college students, especially Asian college students. Chinese have been taught that there is no God, and yet when I worked with Campus Crusade and I worked with all these Chinese, that's what they struggled with the most. They wanted a sense of purpose and meaning in their life. And so I would use these kind of questions with them And some of them actually became Christians. So asking questions can be helpful. Now, once you ask introductory questions, then you can ask follow-up questions. Now, these follow-up questions can be a minute later. They can be a day later, a week later, a month later. Are you getting the idea? You don't know. When? Remember my free-thinking friend in Singapore? I waited a long time to ask her the key question. As a free thinker, have you come to any conclusions about Jesus Christ? I waited a long time before I felt like she was ready to at least talk to me about that. She wasn't ready at first. When she first found out I was a Christian, she was very defensive. And if I had asked her that question right there and then, that would have been it. That would have been the end of the conversation. So we need to be sensitive to the Holy Spirit to know when we can ask introductory questions, and then even more sensitive to know when we can go further. You know, this person here stopped. Why? Because he sensed that it wasn't time to go further. And I'm saying that you and I need to cultivate this in our life as well. We need to know when to push further, when to hold back and allow the Spirit of God to work in people's hearts. Remember what Jesus said in John 16, verse 12, towards the end of his life to his disciples? I have many more things to say to you, but you cannot bear them now. And we need to remember that when we're talking to non-believers. They may not be able to bear everything all at once. We may have to give it to them in pieces. So here are some follow-up questions that we might consider. These are questions that I've used with university students. How is it possible for all religions to be the same when some of them contradict each key belief? Or how is it possible for there to be meaning and purpose in our lives and at the same time believe there is no God? Thought-provoking questions. I remember one day talking to this Chinese lady, and talking to her, I found out that her mother is a Buddhist, her sister is a Christian, so she's trying to figure out which one to believe. I asked her this question. I said, if you were coming to the end of your life and you met Jesus and other great religious leaders and each of them suggested a different path, whose advice would you take? I said, wouldn't you take the advice of someone who's been to the other side and come back to tell us about it? She thought for a moment and said, that's a good point. So what did I do? I removed from her mind the idea that they're all the same. Now, I saw her a couple weeks later, and I asked her this follow-up question. I said, if you're not sure who to follow, Jesus or other great religious leaders, consider this perspective. If you follow Jesus and you're wrong, you may have other lifetimes to get it right. Right? If Hinduism or Buddhism is true. I said, but if you follow other paths and you're wrong, you don't have any more chances to get it right. Hebrews 9:27. So my question to her was this. Wouldn't it be better to choose Jesus first? You see, again, that's a what? A thought-provoking question. Here are some other helpful questions. Questions like, have you come to any conclusions about Jesus Christ? I think this is a good question that you can ask your non-believing friends. Have you come to any conclusions about Jesus Christ? Or how do you fit Jesus into your religious belief? Or, I don't have this on a slide, but let me just tell this to you. In a Charlotte area, you can ask a question like this. I realize it's possible to go to church all your life and hear a lot about God and Jesus and never understand what it really means to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Has anyone ever shared that with you, how to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ? Let me say that again. I realize that it's possible to go to church all your life and hear a lot about God and Jesus and never really understand what it means to have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Has anybody ever shared that with you? Just because your friend is religious and they go to church every Sunday doesn't mean they believe in him. We need to ask our non-believing friends thought-provoking questions. Now, let's try this. Let's practice a little bit of what I just taught you. There are some non-believers who believe in God, and they say they're getting to heaven. And look at what they have said to me in the past, some of these college students. They've said that they're getting into heaven because they're being mostly good. They're performing more good deeds than bad deeds. They follow a high standard. They follow the Ten Commandments. They treat others well. They try their best. They're being sorry for the bad things or being humble. What is one question you could ask these people that would help them to see that something is not quite right with their beliefs? Let's just name some things. There's no one right answer. How do you know when you're good enough? What else? What? Compared to what? Okay, good. Have you ever lied? Okay, all right. So these are good kind of introductory questions, all right? But here's something I want you to understand. We want to ask a question that will not only penetrate their head, right? We want a question, more importantly, that will penetrate their heart. So here's a question I ask. Do you think Hitler will be in heaven? Now, why is that a good question? What do you think they will say to me most likely if they're not Mormon? They'll say that, no, Hitler will not be in heaven, right? Now, when they've told you that Hitler won't be in heaven, what have they just told you? They've told you that there's a standard that Hitler doesn't measure up to and that other people do. So what's your next question? What's that standard? Because my Bible says in Matthew 5:48, be perfect like your heavenly Father is perfect. Or James 2:10 says, if anyone stumbles on one point of the law, he's guilty of the whole law. So you see how asking a thought-provoking question can help people to better face the truth. Now, I want to practice this. I want to show you a video clip of a conversation I had with a university student. Now, I want you to listen because I want you to practice what I've been teaching you. I want you to practice the art of listening, and I want you to see if you can identify the sour notes in the belief systems.
It really matters what you believe.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with her. I think people base their lives off their beliefs, so you need to have something to follow. I think the standard varies from person to person. What's right for some is not right for others. And I think, I don't know, maybe majority rules. We all, the world kind of said, you know, view Hitler, and that's what we did. Not significantly. I think, like her, I was raised with morals, and I think applying my morals to religion kind of makes it have more standing, but I think I'd basically be the same person.
Did you hear the sour note? What did he say was his basis for morality? Or right and wrong? Majority rules. Did you hear that? Now, think about this. Do you really think that he really believed that the majority was always right? Can you think back to a time in American history over 100 years ago when the majority was wrong?
Slavery.
So that was the example I focused on. So watch. Watch the questions I'm asking him.
Okay, so if you think of a majority rules determines what's right or wrong, what about back in times of slavery when we thought that it was okay to have slaves?
Sure. Man, it's like philosophy all over again. I think there's going to be an example to contradict every situation. There's not a set answer to answer that question, so it just varies from person to person.
So there's no such thing as absolutes?
No.
Are you absolutely certain?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think the Bible is reliable and accurate?
Yes, I do. I think it's reliable and accurate.
Why?
Just going to church, and actually one of my youth ministers, he brought it upon himself to try to prove the Bible wrong, just to see if he could, and every source that he found that could even come close to, you know, proving the Bible wrong, he found something else that was even more accurate and counter-argued what he was finding, so...
And so that convinced you that it must be true?
Yeah, that's a really tough question. I don't think I know enough about him to say. I don't really think, well, I don't know. Personally, I don't know enough. And it's a question I think involves a lot of thought.
Do you know what the Bible says who Jesus was?
No, I don't.
You know, in John 14:6, Acts 4:12, and 1 Timothy 2:5 basically say Jesus is the only bridge or the only way to God. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
Here's the $1,000 question. What did he clearly say he believed in that contradicts something he implied by something else he said? So in other words, he didn't say it directly. It was indirectly.
He said the Bible.
He said the Bible's reliable. That was the first thing. That was very clear. Now, the second thing is a little more difficult to identify. What is his view of truth? Okay. Is truth absolute? Okay. Now, if he does not believe in absolute truth, now here's what I want you to think about. What is the very most, not the very least, what is the very most he can believe personally about who Jesus is? If there's no absolute truth, Jesus is one of the ways. That's what I heard. Now you hear the contradiction? The Bible's reliable. Jesus is one of the ways to God.
So is it possible for the Bible to be reliable and yet not believe that Jesus is the only way to God?
Say that again.
Is it possible for the Bible to be reliable and yet Jesus not be the only way to God?
I think it's a matter of a personal opinion. And I don't think Jesus is the only way to God. I think there's other ways. Just that's my own personal faith, and that's the only way that I come to my conclusion on that. I don't know how, but I think there's other ways to God besides Jesus.
So then the Bible's not completely reliable.
No, I think the Bible's reliable, but just whether I choose to follow the Bible or not.
Okay, but if the Bible is reliable and history records what the disciples said, and the disciples said that Jesus claimed to be the only way, then either they were wrong or Jesus is right.
I think Jesus is right. I'm probably wrong, but...
Let me just say something about this video clip. I want you to understand, every time I see this video clip, you know what I feel? I feel sad. Because I think of all the people that you and I know that are like this young man, that are really empty, really empty. Maybe they don't verbally say the things that he says, but inside they're empty. So I hope a video clip like this will give you a greater compassion for your non-believing friends. Realize how lost they really are. Now, I need to ask you a very important question about this video. This young man could have avoided all this unpleasantness if he would have done one thing. If he would have said, no, I really don't believe that the Bible is reliable after all, now that I think about it. Why was he not willing to do that? Did you catch it? Do you catch why he didn't want to give up his belief that the Bible was reliable? Because his youth pastor told him that, and he believed his youth pastor.
But he didn't listen very far.
He didn't listen very far, but he didn't want to give up that belief. You see, people care how little you know until what? Until they know how much you care and they trust you. And if they trust you, they see Christ in your life, then maybe they'll listen to what you have to say with your words. That's why I'm saying that we have to do both in this world. We can't just speak the truth. We have to live the truth and speak the truth in order to make an impact. Now, let me ask you an important question about questions. Why is asking questions so helpful in the world we live in today? Well, I ran across this quote from an ex-Jehovah's Witness who is now a Christian. Listen to what David Reed says about why asking questions is so helpful. He says it this way: a person can close his ears to facts he doesn't want to hear, but if a pointed question causes him to form the answer in his own mind, he cannot escape the conclusion. Why? Because it's a conclusion that he's reached himself. See, that's why asking questions in the world we live in today is so helpful at times. That's why Jesus used questions. That's why the disciples used questions. And that's why in the world we live in today, we should use questions if we want to make progress with certain people. Now, I need to ask one other question about questions. How do I know if I'm asking the right question in the right way to maximize my impact, my effectiveness? I'm not saying that if I know something, I will be successful in using my questions all the time. But I'm saying that I have learned that there is a barometer that I can use that will maximize the possibility of my effectiveness. Do you understand what I'm saying? I'm not saying I will be effective if I keep this barometer in mind. I'm saying that I can maximize the possibility of my effectiveness. What is this barometer? Well, it's the three D's of asking questions. The three D's of asking questions. Doubt, defensiveness, desire. What is that? In other words, I have learned over the years in working with university students that if I ask questions to university students and I keep these three D's in mind as I'm asking the question, I can maximize the possibility of my effectiveness with students. How do I do this? Well, if I ask questions in a way that surface doubt and yet at the same time minimize their defensiveness, but most importantly, they create a desire on their part to want to continue the conversation. Do you know Jesus understood this principle of creating desire in people to continue the conversation? Remember what he did with the woman at the well in John chapter 4? He created a desire in her to hear more about this living water. You see, everything I teach you in this model is not new. These are all principles that the Bible already talks about. But what I want to do is help you develop a formula for remembering these principles. See, this is the fourth most important thing I want to teach you about this model. The first most important thing is that we learn to listen. The second most important thing is that we identify sour notes. The third most important thing is that we learn to ask clarifying questions. And the fourth most important thing I want to teach you about this model is that when you get in conversations with people, to maximize your effectiveness in asking questions, remember the three D's. Surface their doubt, minimize their defensiveness, but most importantly, create a desire to want to hear more. Why is it important to create a desire to hear more? Well, my father and I mentioned in our book this point. People are reluctant to get out of a leaky boat until you provide them a better boat. Have you learned that? You know what Asians will do? They will plug the hole in the boat or try to bail the water out of the boat. They won't get out of the boat until you provide them a better boat. And you may have some friends in the same boat. No pun intended. They won't get out of their boat until you provide a better boat. And we need to help them to see how Jesus can be a better boat. What is it about Jesus that they desire? Now, we've talked about how to surface doubt. How do I minimize people's defensiveness? Well, I could say to you something like this. Why would you believe something so stupid? Not very sensitive. Or I could say something like this. You know, we were talking last week and you said this. Today we were talking and you said this. How do you put these two together in your own mind? You see? One was set in a way to maximize defensiveness. One was set in a way to minimize defensiveness. Let me give you one other illustration. One day I was talking to a guy in the exercise room in the apartment where I lived in Singapore. And in my previous conversations, I knew he was religious, but I couldn't remember where he was exactly spiritually. So I asked him this question. I said, I can't remember. What church did you say you go to? He said, I go to such and such Catholic church. And he paused and said, we believe in Mary. So what do you think was my next question based on what I taught you today? What do you mean by we believe in Mary, right? Because I thought that that would really help. I've taught you this, right? I was wrong. That actually didn't help. Here's what he said to me in reply. We believe that Mary makes up what Jesus lacks. Now, at this point, I could have said to him something like this. Well, you know, the Bible doesn't teach that. But had I said that, what would have happened? That would have been the end of the conversation. So here's what I said to him. I said, do you know what 1 Timothy 2:5 says? He said, no. So I quoted 1 Timothy 2:5. 1 Timothy 2:5 says there's only one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. So what do you think my next question was to him? Why don't you believe that? No, it wasn't. It was, what do you think this verse teaches? Now, why was my next question, what do you think this verse teaches? What am I trying to do? Exactly. Help him come to his own conclusions. So he basically told me what he thought the verse meant, and I said, okay, let me make sure I understand what you're saying. You're saying, I did reflection. I say, there's a God, and there's man, and there's one mediator between God and man, and that person is Jesus Christ. Is that what this verse teaches? And to my surprise, do you know what he said to me? He said, yes, that's what this verse teaches. So here's what I said to him next. I said, certainly I could see how some Catholics could see Mary as being a helpful person who could pray for them, just as maybe some Baptists might consider it helpful if they got Billy Graham to pray for them. See, don't make a minor issue a major obstacle when you're witnessing to people. But here's the key question. But can Mary do anything to help atone for your sins in any way? And to my surprise, you know what he said to me? He said, no, she can't. So you see what I did? I minimized his defensiveness at the same time allowing him to surface the truth for himself. What about the last point? How do we talk to people in a way to create desire to continue the conversation? One day I was talking to this non-believer in Singapore, and to be honest, he was having marital problems. And to be more honest, he was having problems being faithful to his wife. Here's what I said to this non-believer. I said, in the days of Tiger Woods, God can help me to be faithful to my wife. Because that same power that rose Jesus from the dead is available to me. Now, what was his reason for talking to me about Jesus? He wanted to save his marriage. And I was explaining how Jesus can make a difference. Remember my free-thinking friend? I found out one day she got a boyfriend. And I said to her one day, I said, you know, wouldn't it be great to be married to a Christian man who would be faithful to you for the rest of your life? She started thinking about it. And then she realized what I was doing, and she pointed to me and said, I see what you're doing. What was I doing? I was trying to help her to see that Jesus can make a difference in our life. Create a desire. Help people to take a step towards Christ. So let me review what we've talked about today. I said last week that we need to listen and hear the sour notes that people are singing. Okay? Today we talked about the third point, we need to learn to ask clarifying questions. And the fourth thing is what? Learn to ask questions and keep the three D's in mind. Surface doubt, minimize defensiveness, create a desire.
The copyrights for this recording and its content are held by Dr. David Geisler.